This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to this week's edition of Flashback Friday, your opportunity to get some good review by listening to episodes from the past that Jason has handpicked to help you today in the present and propel you into the future. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Thank you so much for joining me today. A few things to talk about today for sure. A big real estate scam. Yes, another one. They happen rather frequently, although they're more frequent on Wall Street, but they certainly happen in the real estate business. I'll talk about that in a moment. Thank you. I got two really interesting reviews this week on this show. We've had some reviews on the other shows as well. So thank you so much for reviewing the shows on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. We really appreciate it. And I got to say this first one, oh, I don't know if I love it or I hate it. I guess I love it. It's kind of funny, but I'll read it to you. First of all, I wish I knew who actually wrote the reviews so I could reach out and thank you for them or mention your name on the show. Unfortunately, I don't. Anyway, I do appreciate them. So it's really funny. One here says, great investment advice, comma, horrible politics. My apologies. Sorry, you don't like my politics there. But it says, this podcast relays excellent real estate investment advice on a wide range of industry topics. The host is articulate and very knowledgeable and a strong interviewer. I'm left out of the middle of most of the political issues and don't mind hearing beliefs of others, but Hartman's political rants are the worst part of his show. Okay, well, I'm sorry you don't like them. I'll try to make sure the political rants are at least relevant to what we're talking about. And today, we're going to talk about a bit of a political rant that is very, very relevant. And it's Rich Karlgaard's article from a few weeks ago on America's Missing Wealth. So I'm going to get to that in just a moment. And another one, thank you for this one. It says, been following for years, my mentor. I've been following Jason over 4 years and have purchased properties via his network. I've also purchased properties outside of his network from other providers. Jason and his team are the best in the industry. Other providers hustled, lied, stretched the truth, and were a joke compared to Jason's team. Jason has also been my mentor in real estate investing. My family and I owe him a debt of gratitude. So thank you for those great reviews. I really appreciate them. And by the way, even though on the first one you don't like my politics, thank you for the honest and thoughtful review. You know, a lot of people that disagree with you politically, they just slam you for no good reason. So I do appreciate the honesty and the candor there. And we'll take it into account. It's duly noted. So let me tell you about this real estate scam. This is unbelievable. You know, a few of our listeners have asked me if, you know, I would invest with one of our providers that is soliciting people for a fund. I'll tell you an interesting conversation I had with one of the people who gives them business and said to me, what do you think about so-and-so's deals? Why are you referring business to them? And I said, no, I'm not. You know, my clients really want a higher return. Basically, their returns at the end of the day are just not that good. And he says, well, I have all kinds of old clients who just want to sit back and they're totally satisfied with a 6% return every year. So, okay, whatever, fine. And you know who's getting really rich is always the person who runs the fund, right? It's the person who skims all the profits off the top and gives the investors some measly return. And you know, there's certainly just no shortage of scams on Wall Street, the modern version of organized crime, but there's no shortage of scams in the real estate business either, really. I mean, here is one great example. A friend of mine from Orange County emailed me this Orange County Register article, and I'm talking about, of course, my hometown, Orange County, California, and it says, executive to plead guilty in scheme that lost elderly investors $91 million. John J. Packard, attorneys say, solicited money to buy and renovate apartment buildings. Sounds familiar, right? The co-founder of a failed apartment investing firm plead guilty to federal fraud charges next week, mostly elderly investors who lost almost $91 million, according to the U.S. Attorney's Office. U.S. District Judge Cormac Carney scheduled a hearing November 6th to allow John J. Packard, 64, of Long Beach, to change his plea on allegations that the Irvine-based Pacific Property Assets was a Ponzi scheme. You know, whenever you see these promoters of these various deals and these various funds, certain investment funds, showing these great returns, well, the reason is there may be some untoward dealings, some unethical dealings, some illegal dealings going on below the surface, a la Bernie Madoff, right? A Ponzi scheme. The article goes on to say, in a letter emailed to victims, I guess he was required to do this probably, in a letter emailed to victims on Monday, this is from the attorney's office. The U.S. Attorney's Office states that Packard plans to enter a plea of guilty. The prosecutor on the case declined to comment, saying that documents pertaining to the hearing are under seal. Now, I wonder, why are they under seal? Why isn't this known and out there for the public? And by the way, folks, although I really haven't heard anything about this in the financial press or read anything about it, but you know, I think the way Bernie Madoff just pleaded guilty was a cover up. I think that case ran much deeper, and there were many other parties involved. Probably, this is just my own speculation. Okay, that was just odd. The way he just instantly pleaded guilty. There was no trial. There was no discovery. A lot of stuff was just unknown to the public as to what really happened and how that scheme really worked. I just got to think that was part of it. I got to think there still is some sort of big cover-up in the Madoff case, probably involving some renowned Wall Street-type people, maybe showing the SEC's failure. Again, there were people that reported Bernie Madoff to the SEC years before, and they said he was okay, declined to investigate, kicked the can down the road, and look at what happened in terms of how people got burned, okay? Assistant U.S. Attorney Joshua Robbins, who also declined to say whether Packard is getting a plea deal in which he will become a witness against former Pacific Property Asset CEO Michael J. Stewart, 67, who reportedly had moved from Orange County to Phoenix. Oh, gosh, the guy's following me. maybe he's working with his other group in Phoenix. I don't know. Attorneys for the pair couldn't be reached for comment. A federal court indictment charged Packard and Stewart with 16 counts of mail, bank, and bankruptcy fraud. The pair pleaded not guilty following their arrest in February. Trial is set for April 14th. If convicted of all charges, Stewart could get up to 320 years in prison. Well, I hope he's listening to my new longevity show because, you know, to outlive that sentence won't be easy, right? Stewart and Packard created Pacific Property Assets, or PPA, in the late 90s to solicit investments to buy, renovate, and operate small apartment buildings in Long Beach, Riverside, and Phoenix. The firm collapsed in the spring of 2009, wiping out most of the money, nearly 700 investors entrusted to it. Losses, including underwater mortgages on PPA buildings, reached an estimated $115 million, prosecutors maintain. Investors expressed outrage that PPA solicited new investments for an, quote, opportunity fund, unquote, promising to pay up to 30% in interest just months prior to the May 2009 default. Well, think about that, folks. What probably happened there is in every Ponzi scheme, at some point, the jig is up. So these guys, their Ponzi scheme lasted about 10 years. And, you know, I bet they probably got all kinds of praise. Maybe they got, you know, the Entrepreneur of the Year Award. Maybe they got listed on the Inc. 500. Who the heck knows, right? They were probably some renowned, respected group during the 10 years of their Ponzi scheme. Maybe. And then by May of 2009, about 10 years after they launched their scheme, probably they couldn't continue the Ponzi, because the way, of course, a Ponzi scheme works is it must get money from new investors in order to pay old investors the artificially high returns. And by then, you know, they're probably just saying, hey, look, we'll pay you 30% interest just so they could keep their scheme going. I bet you that's exactly what was going on then. 10 years later, the jig was up, right? Okay, Stewart and Packard also began soliciting fresh investments for a new apartment venture following PPA's bankruptcy, further enraging investors. Attorneys for creditors argued in bankruptcy court filings that although PPA claimed to be profitable, the firm had been in the red since 2005. The pair was accused of using new investors' cash to make generous interest payments to existing investors until the cash ran out. That, my friends, is a Ponzi scheme.
Remember, you're listening to Flashback Friday. Our new episodes are published every Monday and Wednesday.
Meanwhile, they used company funds to buy an interest in a Newport Beach yacht and paid themselves up to $750,000 per year in salaries, plus millions of dollars in additional payments, prosecutors and creditors' attorneys alleged. So there you go. That there you have it. That was written by Jeff Collins, a staff writer for the Orange County Register. Folks, what is commandment number 3? Be a direct investor. It's thou shalt maintain control, because you might be investing with a crook, you might be investing with an idiot, and even if they're honest and even if they're competent, they're taking giant management fees off the top for managing the deal in most cases. And you know, if you're going to invest in a fund, really, really, really make sure you know and trust the people running it. Let's move on. So I have been criticized for my political leanings at times, and this is an interesting article I want to talk to you about. Okay, it's really right on. Now, of course, we had Rich Karlgaard, who writes for Forbes magazine. We had him on the show several episodes ago, maybe, I don't know, about 10, 20 episodes ago, so a couple months ago. He has a fantastic article that appeared in the October 20th issue of Forbes magazine, and it is entitled America's Missing Wealth. And I'm going to skip some parts of it here for you, but it is really, really spot on when it comes to the impact of government regulation. And you're just going to see it. It's all going to be so apparent by the time we finish discussing this. So here it is. He says, compound interest is the eighth wonder of the world. Did Albert Einstein say this? He should have. It's true. And he goes on to talk a little bit about Dave Ramsey and stuff like that, but I'm just going to skip that part. He says, suppose the U.S. economy since 1949 were giving up 2% extra growth per year because of bad economic policy. In other words, government regulations, okay? Now, 2% a year doesn't sound like much. Most of us could spend 98% of our budget next year without too much pain. The quip about compound interest is noteworthy only because it would take a genius like Einstein to observe something so profoundly simple yet subtly opaque. And here it is. And by the way, there's a picture of good old Einstein here. And it goes on to say, but run the numbers yourself and prepare for a shock. If the U.S. economy had grown an extra 2% per year since 1949, 2014's GDP would be about $58 trillion, not $17 trillion. Is that unbelievable. And you know, this is why my commentary here, this is why I always say, you know, you only have to do a little bit better than everybody else as an investor to be way, way ahead. It is really stark and startling the difference it can make, okay? That is just shocking, okay? So the article goes on to say, so it's 58 trillion versus 17 trillion. So says a study called, quote, "The Federal Regulation and Aggregate Economic Growth," unquote, published in 2013 by the Journal of Economic Growth. More than taxes, it's been runaway federal regulation that crippled U.S. growth by the year and utterly smashed it over two generations. Not all regulation is bad. Mandatory seatbelts have helped cut traffic fatalities by 51% on a population-adjusted basis since 1949. Far fewer people are now killed or maimed in industrial accidents. So, you know, we can thank OSHA for that, right? The air in downtown LA is breathable again. Would this have happened without federal regulation? Yes, but likely not as fast. Regulation kills riches. So let's, for the sake of argument, posit that some regulation has been good for us, while many other regulations have only hurt economic growth. Let's also argue that sensible regulation combined with the retirement of outdated regulation could have brought about the same improvements to health and safety, but at a cost of 1% potential growth per year, not 2%. Where would the U.S. economy be today? Now, folks, this is totally startling. Get ready. Get ready. Okay? You're going to be amazed. The 2014 GDP would be $32 trillion, not $17 trillion. Per capita income would be $101,000 annually, not $54,000. So that's about double. GDP would be about double. Per capita wealth would be $480,000, not $260,000, almost double. It would probably be higher than that, since saving rates might be higher as well. The U.S. would have no federal, state, or municipal debts or deficits. Can you imagine that? Pensions would be solid, so would Social Security. The trend of new entrants to the Forbes 400, that's the Forbes 400 wealthiest people in America, of course, would not favor entrepreneurs in software, the internet, and financial services, but would be more broadly distributed across all industries. Electronic bits, money, and software are less prone to regulation than such physical things as factories, transportation, etc. Listeners, Rich Karlgaard just made an excellent, excellent point, among others. That is really excellent. Because, see, we have really lost a lot of the emphasis on a manufacturing economy, not just because of environmental regulations, but certainly that's one reason, and because of, you know, OSHA regulations and just tons of government regulations and a zillion other things, but also because the wealth would be more widely distributed across different kinds of industries rather than all of this VC money just going to software, internet, and financial services, which are more scalable and hard to regulate, right? Okay, so next point. Faster, quieter successors to the supersonic Concorde, cheap, safe nuclear power. These are question marks at the ends of the sentence. Cancer-curing drugs for small populations. Bullet trains financed by private investors? Yes, that would happen with lower regulation. Okay? And then the next point, the U.S. would have the resources to fight the multiplicity of threats from abroad, from ISIS to computer hackers. Am I guilty of positing ideal outcomes from all that extra wealth? Perhaps. Still, it would be wonderful to have that extra wealth in people's pockets and in government treasuries. What a missed opportunity. Let's start by electing people who are pledged to rethink regulation. This might sound like a conservative partisan plea, it's not. John F. Kennedy, Ronald Reagan, and Bill Clinton, two Democrats and a Republican, were the best presidents since 1949 regarding regulation. By best, I mean these three presidents allowed regulation to grow the least.
Just a reminder, you're listening to Flashback Friday. Our new episodes are published every Monday and every Wednesday.
The three worst, Harry Truman, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama. So there you have it. That is really interesting. And you know what? Rich Karlgaard did not say in that fantastic article, but what he might have said, because what wasn't there, is the concept that I've talked about frequently on shows, and that is, you can't hear the dogs that don't bark. You can't hear the dogs that don't bark. And that is so critically important because that's what happens when you have less regulation. You have economic miracles like that miracle of Singapore, like the miracle of the old USA, where we have this massive growth because the government gets out of the way. I mean, look, every time the government regulates something like low-flow toilets in homes, it makes the price of real estate increase. Last week, there was a big deal that went on with FHA, and it's going to affect a lot of our providers. And it was basically regulating the way people can do deals when they buy FHA or government HUD repo homes, rehab them, and resell them. And it's a big slew of regulations. I mean, people in that side of the real estate business, that food chain, got slapped hard last week. And maybe we'll talk about that on a future episode. But you know what that means? It means more homes languishing in areas that will not be rehabbed, that will not be fixed up, fewer contractors that will be hired, fewer supplies, fewer faucets, fewer toilets, fewer gallons of paint, fewer roofs, fewer roofing contractors employed, and all of that money that flows through the supply chain is just massive. And this is why we've got to constantly be vigilant about reducing the role of government and reducing government regulation. Because government, like termites, like so many things, it just grows. It just grows unless you're just forever vigilant in keeping that monster called government in its box. It certainly has a place. Listen, I like government. I love law and order. I love modernity. I love civilization. It's what we've been working for, what humankind has been working for thousands of years. But it can become stifling, and we've got to keep a balance. We've got to keep that pendulum going back toward the middle so it doesn't become overwrought. I mean, look at every committee. You know, I used to do so much charity work and be on all these different committees and these boards. And, you know, here's what happens in charity organizations and in nonprofit organizations a lot of times. Certainly not all of them. Some of them are very entrepreneurial and think like entrepreneurial lean companies, which is great. But I would venture to say that most of them probably don't. And certainly government doesn't, because government has its incentives always in the wrong place. And so the role of any human organization and the implicit nature of any human is to simply grow their reach, grow their influence, grow their budget, and grow their power. And once they grow all of those things, their motivation becomes to maintain it, to maintain the status quo. And look at a lot of these charity organizations that have been criticized over and over again. Okay, whether it be the ALS and the Bucket Challenge, or it be, you know, Susan G. Komen and, the American Cancer Society. At some point, a lot of these organizations, and I'm not necessarily picking on them, okay, I'm just giving you examples of big ones that I have seen criticized for various reasons recently. But a lot of these organizations, it's like they lose sight of their original meaning. You know, the meaning is to find a cure, to solve the problem, to make a difference, right? But at some point, it just becomes this this iron triangle where everybody's just trying to keep their job, grow their power, grow their influence, grow their budget. You know, in government, in a lot of ways, if you don't spend your budget, you get less the following year. So, of course, what do? You just spend as much as you can when that may not be the best thing. I mean, the role of government is to ensure a level playing field and a peaceful environment where innovation can thrive. And when it doesn't do that, when it gets into the business of buying votes from special interest groups and from people who don't want to work, well, what happens? We get into this whole situation where you just have stagnation and you have red tape. I was talking to someone today who is an actor and a voiceover person, and I was saying, you know, that we hire voiceover people sometimes to do different things on our podcast and videos and so forth. I asked, I said, you know, are you a member of SAG, SAG and AFTRA, right? He said, no. I used to be, but Phoenix is a right to, or Arizona is a right to work state. So when I moved here from California, I didn't have to be anymore, and I just found that it was a lot easier to get work if I wasn't in the union. And I thought, well, isn't that interesting? And I remember one time, only once, out of all the voiceover people I've hired, all the narrators I've hired over the years, one of them was a SAG member. And they just sent me, you know, all of this paperwork I had to do. And, you know, every week they wanted me to fill out these long, detailed reports. And I thought, I'm just hiring this person for a relatively minor job. I mean, you know, I don't have the resources to fill out all this paperwork and do all these reports every week. And, you know, all of my friends who are in businesses where they deal with government or government contracts and the government is their customer, it's like that. It's just pages and pages of reports. I remember one of them saying to me, and this was an engineer who designed electrical equipment and did, you know, some stuff for the military and some kind of battery charger for fighter jets or something like that. And I remember him saying that, you know, filling out the government paperwork, it was like three pages of, you know, who works for you? What color is everybody working for you? What gender is everybody working for you? Before you got to anything actually substantive. You know, I mean, folks, we have to agree, this is just nonsensical. It really is. It's crazy. And on the next episode, we'll have Ellen Brown talking about public banking. And Ellen Brown, oddly, is she kind of likes government a little more than I do. But she does have some interesting ideas. She wrote, she's written several books, and she wrote Web of Debt, and she's a candidate for a some kind of California Treasury office right now. And she's an interesting person. So she's coming up on the next episode to talk about that. And we've just got a bunch of really interesting stuff coming up for you. I want you to think about one more thing, though. And I had someone ask me about this, and I think I'll do another episode on this, again, just as a kind of a review with of course, some new nuances and so forth to it. But that is, remember the LTI ratio. Really, really think about that when you're investing. When you're looking at a real estate deal, you've got to always think of it as two component parts, the land as one component and the improvement, the house or the apartment building sitting on the land, and divide those two component parts up so that you can keep your risk low. You can minimize your risk when investing. And, you know, it took me 19 years to discover that. I mean, it's just new thinking. I have never heard anybody else talk about that. And it really puts us in the position where we can massively reduce, if not in some cases, completely eliminate our risk when investing, because we're buying at or below the cost of construction. And we're basically getting the land super cheap or free. And, you know, it just amazes me how many people come to me and say, hey, Jason, should I buy this property in Miami, for example? Or should I buy this property? You know, I live just outside of Boston and I'm looking at a deal. Or I live in New Jersey and I'm looking at a deal. Or Pennsylvania or Chicago. And you know, or I'm looking at this resort property and here's the deal. And, you know, I'm looking at this property in a foreign country in a resort area, maybe in Belize. I think they'd have to have their head examined. But, you know, that's another story we've talked about in the past. And, you know, when they come to me, invariably, I can just, you know, ask them two questions and just figure it out so quickly. And you can do this too. You know, what is the rent-to-value ratio? What is that? What is the type of renter, okay, that's paying that rent-to-value ratio? And then what is the overall value of the property in terms of land and improvement, and dividing those two up? And you can, you know, a lot of this game of investing is just simply about avoiding mistakes. And the older I get, the more conservative I get when it comes to just not wanting to lose money. I'm just really sick of making mistakes and losing money on deals. And, you know, when things are going well, that's the time we have to be especially diligent and we have to be especially careful, because that's the time when we get stupid. Stupid money comes out in times of prosperity. You do not want to be throwing your money around. You know, I remember older people saying when I was a kid, you know, about me sometimes and about other people, other kids mostly, but, you know, it's like the money is burning a hole in your pocket. You know, you don't have to be throwing money around. If you've got money and you're doing well, hey, great, good for you. But still be a prudent, conservative, careful investor. Because I'll tell you, and I have this from very personal experience, firsthand experience, losing money is no fun. But not only that, unwinding these deals can be a pain. It can take a lot of your time to unwind bad deals, whether you're unwinding it before or after you actually bought it. Okay, so really consider that. Be a careful, prudent investor, but do not get the paralysis of analysis. Because if you get the paralysis of analysis, you, my friend, are in trouble, and you may be worse off than the careless investor. So that's the other side of the spectrum. That's the other swing of the pendulum. You don't want to go overboard. And I think that was best summed up by that great quote I've often referred to. And it goes something like this. And I'll leave you with this quote for the day, okay? And really, this is one to live by. It's a goodie, okay? It's not from me. I can't even remember who it's by, but here it goes. Successful people make decisions quickly, as soon as all the facts are available, and change them very slowly, if ever. Unsuccessful people, on the other hand, make decisions slowly and change them quickly. So, you know, what is that saying to us, that great quote? Well, it's saying, get the facts, get a reasonable amount of education, not too much, because the overeducated people tend to get the paralysis of analysis, get a reasonable amount of education, make decisions, and stick with the decisions. Income property investing is a game of time. So be investing with that long-term focus. It's like the tortoise and the hare, the old fable of the tortoise and the hare. The tortoise, the slow and steady tortoise, wins the race. And the hare, you know, that's the person changing making decisions slowly, changing them fast, not sticking with anything, flavor of the month, investment du jour. Okay, that might be fine for soup du jour, but it's not that way with investing. We've got to make good, sound, prudent decisions and stick with those decisions through thick and thin. All right, so there's my quote for the day. Be sure to join us for the Birmingham property tour coming up, and be sure to take advantage of the fantastic sales, and a lot of you have, they're almost gone, by the way, of our Creating Wealth Home Study course and the Meet the Masters combination physical products. We've got those physical products on the website at jasonhartman.com in the store. We've got the Birmingham Creating Wealth Seminar Live and Property Tour in the events section at jasonhartman.com. So take advantage of those. I hope to see you in just a couple of weeks in Birmingham, Alabama. We're going to have a great tour there and a great Creating Wealth Seminar. So please get registered ASAP and get your airfare booked. By the way, we've got a great room block. It's at the Westin Hotel. And I know some of you have asked. That Westin Hotel is just gorgeous. By the way, I stayed there when I was in Birmingham a couple months ago. That Westin is beautiful. And some of you have had a little bit of a problem with a room block. We're trying to make sure the hotel has that listed under either Platinum Properties or Jason Hartman. So you should be able to get that room block in our special low room rate. I believe it's $119 per night at the Westin. I look forward to seeing you in Birmingham, and our next episode will have Ellen Brown. Thanks for listening.
I've never really thought of Jason as subversive, but I just found out that's what Wall Street considers him to be.
Really? Now, how is that possible at all?
Simple. Wall Street believes that real estate investors are dangerous to their schemes because the dirty truth about income property is that it actually works in real life.
I know. I mean, how many people do you know, not including insiders, who created wealth with stocks, bonds, and mutual funds? Those options are for people who only want to pretend they're getting ahead.
Stocks and other non-direct traded assets are a losing game for most people. The typical scenario is you make a little, you lose a little, and spin your wheels for decades.
That's because the corporate crooks running the stock and bond investing game will always see to it that they win. This means, unless you're one of them, you will not win.
And unluckily for Wall Street, Jason has a unique ability to make the everyday person understand investing the way it should be. He shows them a world where anything less than a 26% annual return is disappointing.
Yep, and that's why Jason offers a one-book set on creating wealth that comes with 20 digital download audios. He shows us how we can be excited about these scary times and exploit the incredible opportunities this present economy has afforded us.
We can pick local markets untouched by the economic downturn, exploit packaged commodities investing, and achieve exceptional returns safely and securely.
I like how he teaches you how to protect the equity in your home before it disappears and how to outsource your debt obligations to the government.
And this set of advanced strategies for wealth creation is being offered for only $197.
To get your Creating Wealth Encyclopedia Book 1, complete with over 20 hours of audio, go to jasonhartman.com/store.
If you want to be able to sit back and collect checks every month just like a banker, Jason's Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series is for you. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guests' opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.